You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
On August 26th and 27th, scientists and students descended on Central Park and worked all day and night to tally the species of flora and fauna found there. This BioBlitz, as it's being called, was developed by the Central Park Conservancy and Macaulay Honor College at CUNY to help measure the park's biodiversity. Joining us are two scientists involved in the BioBlitz, Amy Burkov, a tropical ecologist, and Mary Pearl, conservationist and associate dean and chief academic officer at CUNY's Macaulay Honors College. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mary, how many surveys like this have there been in the history of Central Park?
There have only been two. And the first one was in 2003, so it made sense 10 years later to see what's happened.
And how many people are involved in, and how is the BioBlitz organized?
It's really fun to organize a BioBlitz because you gather up all the taxonomic experts, all the people who know about different life forms as experts. And, of course, in New York City, we're blessed with botanists at the Botanical Garden, zoologists at the zoo, the New York City Audubon Society, and, of course, the great number of faculty across the campuses of the City University. They all organize. Our labor was all the sophomores in Macaulay Honors College. This was the kickoff of a required seminar in science that they take in the fall of their sophomore year.
Well, you need a lot of people, I'm sure, because the park is a lot of area to cover in one day.
That's right. Well, we had 24 hours, and we broke the students up into teams, each assigned to a taxonomic leader. And part of the goal was to educate students, give them a rich experience with scientific data collection in a complex ecosystem, and also rub shoulders with some of the most enthusiastic scientists you'll ever meet.
And is it important that it goes on at night as well? Are there species that you would never find during the day?
Well, sure. There are bats, for starters, and owls and moths. So it's important to do the full 24 hours.
Well, Amy, you're a beetle expert. Are there lots of beetles in Central Park?
Well, we know more about that now than we did a year ago at this time, or 10 years ago at this time. So, yeah, we actually collected a total of about 44 beetle species in this BioBlitz, which is a six-fold increase over the number of beetles that were collected in 2003.
And some of those beetles are good beetles, and some of those beetles are bad beetles.
Well to, to a beetle enthusiast, it's very hard to describe a beetle as a bad beetle.
Well, the Asian longhorn beetle, the emerald ash borer, they're invasive species, and they can cause a lot of damage.
We do have species that cause a lot of damage. They're kind of mavericks within their very biodiverse lineages because they have jettisoned the life of feeding on dead and decaying plant matter and taken up the life of feeding on living plants. And so there are a handful of species that can cause a tremendous economic damage, but they belong to very large and diverse guilds that are providing important ecosystem services.
What's the most common beetle in the park?
Well, in our sample, one of our most abundant beetles was actually a very small scarab dung beetle. And this was a surprise to us because the pooper scoopers are out there doing a pretty good job with their scooping.
But the dung beetles do a lot of cleanup?
Well, we didn't actually find them in dung. We found them in rotting vegetation. And that's another place that they can live where they're carrying out their mission in life of decomposing dead material.
And then by decomposing it, they're also enriching the soil?
They would ultimately end up enriching the soil, yes.
Do you have to turn over rocks and dig through the underbrush to locate these kinds of insects?
Well, we use three different sampling methods because we particularly were interested in going after these decomposers. So we did aerial netting, which will get the things that are sitting on plants, but we also used kitty litter boxes with inset sifters to sift leaf litter and rotting vegetation, and then we looked under the bark of dead and dying trees. And we went into three different habitats. We went up to the North Woods, and we went to the Ramble, that's sort of mid-park. And then we went into the Hallett Nature Sanctuary, which is a very small spit of land that goes into the pond at the southern end of the park.
Now, are beetles the most commonly found insects, or are there others that are also found in great abundance?
We haven't sorted. They're going to be very species-rich there. There might be other things like ants that are more abundant. We haven't finished sorting all of the material yet. We have, I think, 31 spider species, so they're creeping up towards the beetles, but they're not going to get there.
Creeping up, okay. Mary, bats have been dying off in large numbers in the Northeast over the past few years from white nose syndrome. What do we know about what's causing that disease? Is it happening here in Central Park as well?
Well, one of the distressing findings was that whereas in 2003 some large brown bats and brown bats were found, little brown bats, they are the ones that have been affected by white nose syndrome, and it seems to have been imported perhaps by someone who is hiking in a cave in Europe coming to North America and spreading this fungus that causes death to bats because it in a complex way it affects their hibernation. So they have been dying off. We didn't find them, but interestingly, there are solitary tree roosting bats, silver-haired bats and red bats, and we did find them in abundance in the park this time around.
If I'm just walking through the park, would I even notice?
No, you just see at night bats doing their marvelous aerobic antics. And I have to say, you asked about good beetles and bad beetles. Let me say, bats are marvelous. In our
even though they give people the willies, they are really important to the ecosystem?
Super important. A single insect-eating bat in our in Central Park can eat 1,000 mosquitoes in an hour. That's much better than slathering yourself with insect repellent, isn't it? So they're really important to our ecosystem.
So maybe I should get a couple of bats for my backyard.
Yes, Absolutely. A lot of people put up bat boxes to attract them.
We put up a bat house in my community garden.
What is a bat box?
It's a nesting box that you're hoping to invite some bats to come live and eat some of your mosquitoes.
Well, you mentioned that the last BioBlitz in Central Park was in 2003. Have there been really important, noticeable changes over the past decade?
Yes, there have, and I have to give a shout-out to the Central Park Conservancy. They're a private nonprofit, but they are dedicated to restoring, maintaining, and enhancing Central Park, and I think it's a reflection of some of their management practices that we've seen, for example, the return of the chipmunk to the northern part of the park. And I think that's because they closed up all the garbage cans, and so the chipmunks were able to outcompete the rats that had been there. Another really exciting find are among the fish.
We're having a lot of chipmunks in Central Park?
We're having a lot of chipmunks
in Central
Park. I
only see squirrels.
Well, you see squirrels in the southern part. You have to walk up to the northern, more remote areas to find the chipmunks, but they'll cross the trail. And I would invite people to explore the north because the park's very safe these days. I was also going to say that our fish expert, Professor John Waldman from Queens College, identified the bullhead catfish and black crappie. And
Where do the catfish come in? How do they wind up in Central Park? They can't swim upstream and wind up in waters in Central Park.
Well, this is actually one of the interesting things about the park is that a lot of animals get released there, whether they are native or exotic. For example, turtles of all kinds, red-eared sliders are not native to Central Park, but a lot of pets find their way. I can't tell you how the catfish and crappie got there, but what I can say, it means that the quality of the park's water bodies are similar to those found in pristine, remote parts of upstate New York. And so I think the Soil and Water Lab at the Conservancy really made a difference there in making the habitat friendly to a variety of fish.
My guests are Amy Berkoff and Mary Pearl, and we're talking about the BioBlitz that was just conducted a couple of months back at Central Park. Amy, a couple of years ago, we talked about urban evolution on the show and learned that mice and insects living in different parts of the city are evolving differently, and that many of the places wildlife live in New York are isolated from other areas where wildlife live. Are you seeing any evidence of that in the species living in Central Park?
We have no idea, because insects are just such huge and diverse groups, and somebody would have to be focusing in very specifically on one particular group to study that particular question. And we have somebody working on the mice in New York City. But basically what happens in urban environments is that as we urbanize and suburbanize, we're taking a continuous habitat and turning it into little isolated fragments. And in some cases, like with our decomposing insects, they're in an even patchier environment because we don't tend to leave a lot of decomposing matter in those habitat patches. And when these things are small patches and isolated by long distances, then that cuts down on the exchange, and even very common things can become rare and isolated.
So do they tend to stay there? Or, for example, would beetles, would we see different kinds of beetles now than we saw 10 years ago?
I think you probably will see, you know, had there been a really extensive survey, you probably would have seen differences just because there's been so many improvements in habitat management in the park. I've lived in New York for 34 years, so I know that we've seen a lot of improvements in the way that we think about our urban landscapes in terms of actually turning them into something that creates habitat for other kinds of life.
Mary, most people see squirrels, as yes. we mentioned, pigeons, sometimes rats and mice, cockroaches, ants. Is that just the tip of the iceberg as far as wildlife goes in the park?
Yes. Amy's called that the big four, the pigeons, rats,
cockroaches. Yes. And the squirrels.
And squirrels.
That's what our students will know.
Well,
that's
have to tell you, I hate squirrels because they eat my tomatoes.
Oh,
there's, in my backyard.
But you have to admire the rascals. And actually,
no,
when
I don't.
and they're the only native of our big four, so we have to give them some credit.
They're indigenous.
Yes. Well, they're on the whole East Coast. Their Latin name, the second part of their Latin name is Carolinensis, which gives you an idea that they're from the Carolinas up through Connecticut, and then the red squirrel takes over. But one of the interesting things about squirrels is, like mice, they don't have big home ranges. So that's where you'll see differences where suddenly you'll see in one park, like Washington Square Park, has black squirrels. They're not a different species. They're a different color phase. And it's just like inbreeding in a family. If you have inbreeding in a population, some rare traits may become dominant.
What other mammals live in the park that we might not notice? There is a zoo, so we
yes,
have some.
Yes, there's the zoo.
You don't count those, right?
No. I think the most elusive animal I didn't see, but I know it's there, is the flying squirrel. There are also raccoons. There are also, instead of the house mouse, there's also the deer mouse or the white-footed mouse, and, of course, bats.
Is it true that raccoons are the most common vectors for rabies?
I can't tell you that you know, so few rabies looms large in people's minds. It's a very, I don't believe there have been any deaths in rabies in New York State in many years. I do think, yes, that any mammal could be rabid, and I wouldn't approach a raccoon that appeared in the daytime. They're what are called crepuscular animals. They appear at dawn and dusk, and if they're out during the day, leave them alone. Let someone know.
How much of an impact did Sandy have, or do any kinds of downpours like that have on the insect life in the park, especially the beetles?
Well, it depends on the fate of the dead wood. And so we actually found that in our beetle sample, we got by far the highest diversity in the Hallett Nature Preserve in the southern, very developed end of the park. And that was, we think, specifically because vegetation is left intact. And one of our very productive sources was an oak tree, a large oak that fell during Sandy, and that we were able to look under the bark and found many, many different kinds of beetle larvae there. In most of the park, that wood would not be left in place, and it would end up in a chipper, most likely.
But you left those in place because it helped keep the biodiversity going?
In the nature sanctuary, it's not generally open to the public, and so I think in their management, they're able to just let things decompose more naturally there.
Would the park be all that different from a woodland somewhere?
It's
because the park is slightly unnatural.
It's completely unnatural.
It's completely unnatural.
It was developed by Frederick Law Olmsted.
So would it be different in Prospect Park, which really was a natural area that then was made into a park?
Well, actually, the only stand of native woodland that left is in the New York Botanical Garden in the Bronx. If you really want to see original forest, that's where you've got to go. I think that we have an assemblage of species that's fairly uniform across the metropolitan area. But the good news is you step into any of these big parks, Prospect Park, Central Park, and you see a fantastic array of different species.
And would you find more beetles in the botanic gardens?
You would have to set up a very controlled study to answer that. I actually have a colleague that's been working there trapping beetles over a period of years, but we don't have parallel samples to look at. It would be interesting to compare.
I think it would be interesting to do parallel studies in Prospect Park, Forest Park,
mm-hmm. It would be.
Central Park, and the same thing with the Botanic Gardens, Brooklyn and the Bronx.
Well, actually, at Macaulay, we are planning on continuing having bio blitzes and moving around to the different parks, including Fresh Kills out in the new park that's out in Staten Island, and the New York Botanical Garden are all places where we would love our students to collect this kind of information.
When do you expect all the data collected during the BioBlitz to be reviewed and compiled?
Well, it's ongoing. So far, we're at nearly 500 species. The reason it takes a while is some identifications are difficult. We'll be having some public events located at Macaulay College and sponsored by the Central Park Conservancy starting in March. We expect to have our full count finished by the end of the year, and our students will work on it. And if people want to find out information, we're going to have programs for the public, and they can go to the website of the Central Park Conservancy, which is centralparknyc.org, to get information on that.
I didn't mention birds, but there are other times when birds are counted. Did you count them again this time?
Absolutely. With the help of scientists from the New York City Audubon Society, we counted a lot of birds. Because it was the end of August, we had kind of the tail end of some migration, and it's hard to collect, to identify warblers in the fall, but we found a great number of species of birds.
And that reminds me that this was at the end of August. Might you have found very different things if you had started this in the spring or in January?
Absolutely. But for arthropods, I think that this was a great time of year to do it because they build up in diversity and abundance throughout the summer as it gets warmer. So I actually think that doing it very early in the year is a little harder than doing it right at the cusp of summer and fall.
And if you wanted to get the most number of birds, we counted 35 that day in late August. But if we had done it in May, where there had been more abundant migrations, we might have counted more.
I want to thank both of you for being on our show. Mary Pearl is a conservationist, an associate dean and chief academic officer at CUNY's Macaulay Honors College. And Amy Burkhoff is a tropical ecologist, which is perfectly appropriate to New York City and Central Park.
Quite.
We've been talking about this bio blitz that sent hundreds of people to look in Central Park around the clock for 24 hours to find out just how diverse it is. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.